This program is called The Untrained Eye. Over in London, there's a group that has good time insisting that no matter what anybody says, the Earth is actually flat. Back in the 1960s, when the United States sent its first orbiter around the Earth, it sent back pictures, and the American ambassador thought it would be fun to have the head of the English Flat Earth Society come over and look at them. That gentleman was very kind about it. He came over and looked at the pictures. He said how great they were, and then he said, "It is amazing how, to the untrained eye, the Earth looks round." What was so funny about this was that he was making fun of experts. Every time an expert is shown to be dead wrong by common sense, his response is always, "Well, that's the way it looks to the untrained eye. Only an expert like me understands why what you consider reality doesn't make sense." We say this around us all the time. Whenever people crack down on crime, crime goes down. In Europe, the big drive has been getting rid of the death penalty and being kind to criminals and outlawing guns. We had the same thing in the United States in the 1960s, and Europe is experiencing exactly what we did. The crime rate in Europe is going out of sight. Everybody falls down and worships, especially the respectable conservatives, when somebody mentions diversity. Now, diversity is an unqualified disaster, and any person with common sense can see that. In Europe, once again, the crime rate is going out of sight. They've had chronic unemployment, so they're bringing in millions of immigrants from the third world, and they call it diversity, and they say it's good. They don't give any reason for it. People keep pointing out that it's an unqualified disaster, and their response is, "Yes, to the untrained eye, it looks like an unqualified disaster." So this program is dedicated to the untrained eye. To the untrained eye that sees silliness, facts, and reality.
This program is about the silly assumptions we live with. One of the silliest assumptions that we hear all the time is that the middle of the road in politics is a magic place. The votes, we are told, are in the middle of the road. Actually, if you will take a step back into the real world and look at the records of people who actually get elected, you'll find there's absolutely nothing to this rule. Every year, the American Conservative Union rates the voting records of congressmen. They give you a higher score to congressmen who are more conservative. The Americans for Democratic Action rate congressmen the same way, and they give higher grades, higher ratings, to congressmen who vote liberal. Now, if you will look at the voting records of people who actually get elected to Congress, you will find that very, very few of them are in the middle of the road politically. And yet, we hear one commentator after another praise the virtues of this magic, wonderful middle of the road that elects people. The only problem with it is, it's not true. In England, or in Britain, I should say, the Conservative Party under Margaret Thatcher was pretty far right by British standards, and it kept winning elections. But they kept being told that this was ridiculous, that you couldn't win elections by being far right. They had to come to the middle of the road. So, when Thatcher was tossed out of the leadership of the Conservative Party and Major took over, the party went to the middle of the road. Since then, it has stopped being the majority party. In fact, it has been practically destroyed politically. There's a lot of question whether it's ever going to come back. The Progressive Conservative Party of Canada was absolutely ruined at the polls. There were other reasons, but they were very careful to be middle of the road. They had a middle of the road candidate win at their convention, then ended up with 2 seats in the Canadian Parliament. Republicans lost both houses of Congress for 25 years until they went to the, quote, extreme right, unquote, with Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan won 2 overwhelming victories in 1980 and 1984. In 1980, he took the Senate from the Democrats. Then, George Bush, Sr., in 1988, was elected as Reagan's successor. He then got rid of every single Reagan appointee, thousands of them. He said that the Republican Party was now going to be a kinder and gentler party than the nasty old party under Reagan. And in 1992, Bush lost his bid for re-election. In 1994, Newt Gingrich led the Republican Party to what was called an extreme right position in the House of Representatives. For the first time since 1954, that is 40 years earlier, the Republicans won a majority of the House, and they've had it ever since. So everybody always agrees, all the commentators on every program always wisely nod their heads and say, the middle of the road is where the votes are. In real politics, the middle of the road is not where the votes are. For one thing, it's impossible to know where this middle of the road is. You have to hit on issues that will get people mobilized. And a lot of times, the very issues that mobilize people are also the issues that are considered extreme. So, in real politics, this whole business, the most fundamental statement of wisdom that we have in American politics, that the middle of the road is where the votes are, is nonsense. Complete, utter, dribbling nonsense. If you want to prove that it's dribbling nonsense, remember that that was Jerry Ford's mantra and Robert Dole's mantra, that the middle of the road is where the votes are. Well, we know Jerry Ford was the only president who was unelected. He never won a national election, either for president or for vice president, and he was defeated in his bid for re-election. But even after Reagan won in 1980 and 1984, Jerry Ford was back in there dribbling that the middle of the road is where the votes are. Remember, Jerry Ford was the man Lyndon Johnson was talking about when he said, back in the 60s, Jerry Ford is so dumb he can't walk and chew gum at the same time. Lyndon Johnson was a past master of politics, and Jerry Ford isn't. The only election that Jerry Ford ever won was for his congressional district. And, a little secret here, when he ran for Congress and when he won for Congress, he had a very high ACA rating, a very low ADA rating. In other words, the only time Jerry Ford ever actually won any elections was when he violated the middle-of-the-road rule.
When a paid political commentator says, the middle of the road is where the votes are, he is saying, let's not be extreme, or, in plain English, let's not rock the boat. Well, that's what any establishment commentator, whether he is a liberal or a respectable conservative, gets paid to say. Don't rock the boat. The establishment does not want you to rock the boat, and that is the kind of commentator the establishment is going to put on television.
Back when I was a teenager, I had a certain misplaced respect for the intelligence of my elders. I remember reading in the World Almanac a piece that said, education pays. To prove this point, the almanac had a list of the number of years certain groups of people went to school and their present incomes. It turned out that the people who went to school more had higher incomes. I couldn't believe that adults would fall for that. I know better now. I know that adults fall for anything that people say that sounds wise. But back then, I was astonished. I had observed by then that the present income of a person whose parents' cars were more expensive was higher than the average income of people whose parents' cars were less expensive. I could have made up the same chart and said, your automobile is a wonderful investment for your children. The fact is that the children of people who can afford more expensive cars, on the average, are going to make more money in their lives. They have better genes, they have better upbringing, and they obviously come from a family which does make money. I make the joke to people that Bill Gates only had 1 year of college. Think how much money he would have if he had 4 years of college. Think how much money he would have if he had a PhD. Well, if Bill Gates were the kind of person who would have finished 4 years of college, he would still have a pretty good income. He would inherit his father's enormous fortune and all the connections his family has, but he wouldn't be in the billionaire category, much less in the $50 or $100 billion category that he is in. What that World Almanac table of statistics was saying was that people who have parents who can pay for more years of education end up having a higher income in later life than people whose parents could not afford to send them to college. It said that a person who has the drive to work his way through college is going to end up making more money in his life than someone who does not have the drive to work his way through college. Someone who makes well enough on the SATs to get into college is going to have a higher income than someone who flunks the SATs. Well, that's not too much of a surprise, but it's certainly not a cause and effect relationship. None of this has anything to do with the value of a college education, per se. And I was about 15 years old, and that struck me as extremely silly. It is true that a person whose parents drove a more expensive car will end up making more money on the average than someone whose parents drive a less expensive car. But if you, with a straight face, started saying that how much you spend on the family car determines your children's future, they would put you someplace cozy and warm where they give you lots of drugs until you got better. When Thomas Alva Edison was asked how he came up with all of his great inventions, he could have told the truth. He could have said, well, I was born with one hell of a lot better brain than the average person, and I used it. But that, of course, would have sounded like he was putting everybody else down. People wanted to hear an answer that they could use. They wanted to hear an answer that made him just plain folks. So Edison said, genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I wish I had a nickel for every time I have been bored out of my skull hearing that ridiculous statement repeated. Karl Marx said that all value is labor, how much labor is put in something. And Edison said 99% of value is labor. Now, if you had told Edison that he was 99% Marxist, he would have gotten very upset, but that was exactly what he was saying. The fact is, perspiration does not succeed. If value were simply a matter of labor, then India and China would long since have been the richest countries on the planet Earth. They work a lot over there. No, value is not 99% perspiration. The people who actually produce value perspire a good deal less than the people who don't, on the average. On the average, the person whose family can afford to send him to college, or who has the drive to work his own way through college, and who can get into college, is going to make a higher income than someone who does not have these advantages. But this is not any proof that the education, quote, education, unquote, itself provides a higher income for life. Yet, here I was, a teenager, wondering how any adult could read this, much less write it, and come to the conclusion that the more money you spend on education, the more money you're going to make in life because of the, quote, education, unquote. I did a program called What is Truth, which is in the archives, and at least I think it would be well worth your listening to. And I kept making the point that what is truth is a very practical question. It's not some sort of theoretical, abstract discussion of what is truth. And one example of it is what Thomas Alva Edison said that I have been bored numb with ever since. You have to ask why a person says something. Is it because it is true? Or is it because it is what he needs to say at that point? Well, Edison wanted to be just plain folks. He wanted everybody to know that he was just a regular guy who happened to work a lot, and therefore he made it. This would inspire the youth and all the rest of it and make everybody say, gosh, old Tom, he's a real fine guy. Also, as you get older, you want people to think that you didn't succeed because of what you were given at birth, a good brain, some talents. You succeeded because of your own willingness to work, your own virtues. very seldom going to hear anybody, in fact, I don't think I've heard anybody but me, say they accomplished what they accomplished. First of all, because they were given a good brain. This makes you sound as if you're saying everybody else wasn't given as good a brain as you got, and so you're not regular folks. This has nothing to do with telling the truth, and in fact, it's false. And you'd better learn that if you're going to get along in this world. Anybody who has been in business or in politics knows that you had better be sure you know why someone says something if you're going to assess what they say. If someone is trying to sell you a house, obviously they're going to say that that's the nicest house in the world. Are you going to believe them? When someone is trying to sell education, they're going to say education is everything. Are you going to believe them? Well, we do. And we pay a heavy price for it. Today, every young person, or almost, let's say, half of our young people, dedicate their entire lives, largely, to paying tuition for education. A young person finishes college, and he faces 10 years of paying off a back-breaking college loan. About the time he finishes paying that off, he may, after wasting 4 years in college and 10 years paying that debt, be able to think about having a family. But when he starts thinking about having a family, the main expenditure he's going to have to think about is not a house, not food, not transportation. It's going to be saving up money, not for his retirement, but for sending those children to college, and tuition is climbing day by day. So the logic that I saw in my teens in that World Almanac was the logic that got us into this situation. It has been endlessly costly, and it was because adults were falling for a rather stupid line. Obviously, the people who put together a World Almanac have gone to college, they sent their children to college, and they think that other people should go to college and send their children to college. And, of course, all the propaganda at the time was that education overcomes all differences, all men are created equal except for their level of education. Very comforting, very saleable, and almost unbelievably costly to society later on. I'm a political expert, so let me delve into my own field and tell you Whitaker's Law on Political Experts. Now, everybody accepts the idea that you win elections by hiring a big-time political consultant. Whitaker's Law says that once you become a big-time, highly paid political consultant, you will always be, whether you win or lose, a big-time, highly paid political consultant. The reason for this is that if a campaign can afford a highly paid political consultant, it's either going to win or make a pretty good showing in the election. That consultant doesn't really have to do anything to assure that. And once you become a big-time political consultant, losing an election is not going to reduce your income any. After all, most political consultants lose the election that they're consulting on. In order to get somebody elected, you have to win the primary and you have to win the election. And often when the election comes around, there's more than one opponent. So most of these political consultants will lose. But that's not the elections people talk about. And I personally don't know of any political consultant who ever got paid less for consulting on the next election because he lost the last one or two or three. The point is, he's been in lots of elections, he has lots of experience, and therefore he's even more of a big-time political expert. One of the pieces of history I love to recite is what happened when the French and the Germans went to war in 1870, again in 1914, and again in 1940. In 1870, the French had a bigger army than the Prussians did, but the Prussians moved faster. They were inside France so fast that they flanked the French army and drove it all the way back to Paris. In 1914, the French army was just about the same size as the German, but the Germans moved faster. They got behind the French army and all the way to Paris before the French could react. In 1940, the French had the Maginot Line. They had plenty of time to prepare. But the German army moved too fast. It got behind them, and it marched all the way to Paris before the French could react. Now, this may sound a little repetitive. I'm sure it sounded a little repetitive to the French. But no general got demoted because of this. Every army promotes its generals from the colonels who lost the last war, or won the last war. It really doesn't make any difference whether they won it or they lost it. They are military experts. They were in the war, which means they are experienced military experts, and they get promoted accordingly. If you've ever read the Peter Principle, you'll know what I'm talking about. But expertise and income has very little to do with whether an expert actually accomplishes anything or not. When I talked about what is truth, I discussed the fact that the Wall Street Journal regularly has reports, scientific tests, that compare monkeys throwing darts at the list of the Fortune 500 to the results that market analysts get when they go through all that expensive scientific work, and they make selections from the Fortune 500 or other stock groups. These results come out dead even every time. But we still pay those market analysts enormous amounts of money. The cost gets transferred down to you. After all, they've got lots of education, and that's got to be worth lots of money, right? Well, it isn't. But that doesn't mean that these people are ever going to lose a dime because they don't do their jobs well. An expert is experienced. An expert is someone who is in on things, whether he was successful or not, has next to nothing to do with whether he gets promoted or not. When political commentators end up their program praising the middle of the road and telling each other that the votes are in the middle of the road, no one is ever going to ask them, why don't you name some people in the middle of the road who actually got elected? The only people allowed on there are paid political commentators. And no political commentator is going to keep his job if he asks another political commentator a question like that. Besides, what they are saying sounds so good, and that's the reason they're saying it. Not because it makes sense, but because it's a very, very good thing to say, and you know that your audience is going to be sitting there open-mouthed in open-mouthed admiration at the wisdom of this expert commentator and well-paid expert commentator on politics. I remember a scene in the movie Dirty Harry when Clint Eastwood was taking care of a plane hijacking, so he got on the plane in uniform as a pilot. He looked like a pilot. He had everybody fooled. He sat down, and I believe it was the co-pilot who began to taxi the plane. Then Eastwood took over, and the co-pilot looked around at him and said, you've never piloted a plane before in your life, have you? And, of course, Dirty Harry then proceeded to laugh and say, no, I haven't, and then to take care of the hijackers. But the point is that a trained pilot can tell, even during taxiing, whether the other pilot knows what he's doing or not. Now, let's apply this to a college education. How exactly are you going to tell whether somebody has a college education or not? You can't. A college education doesn't provide anything that anybody can identify. Many and many and many a person has taken a job by faking his academic credentials. He's done a wonderful job, despite the fact that he didn't take French in college, and then he was exposed. I'm not quite sure why he was exposed. He was doing a good job. Oh, yes, I do know why he was exposed, because he didn't take French in college. This is a pretty silly way to run a society. Talking about taking French in college reminds me of a skit that the fellow who played Father Guido Sarducci, I think I got the name right, on Saturday Night Live did. He said, I have this course, and it would be better for someone, instead of going to college, to wait 10 years and take my course. Then I will certify that you were in college, that you are a college graduate. This course was very easy because it consisted of what a person 10 years after college would remember about college. He said, you can say you took Spanish, because I will teach you por favor, and I will teach you uno, dos, tres, and 10 years after you've been to college, that's what you would remember. I will certify you took Latin, because you remember veni, vidi, vici, amo, amas, amat. And that's about all you would remember 10 years after you were in college. And he went through a number of subjects. And it made perfectly good sense to all the college graduates who watched Saturday Night Live. Nobody can tell whether you were a college graduate or not, because there's nothing particularly to being a college graduate. It's just that you're required to prove it. Saturday Night Live was a huge success with advertisers because it was aimed at the ideal demographic. It was aimed at young suburbanites who had been to college and whose parents had been to college. Saturday Night Live was also an enormous success with critics because it was aimed at people just like the critics. The critics were suburbanites who had been to college and their parents had been to college. So naturally the critics said that Saturday Night Live was intelligent humor aimed at intelligent people. That makes sense. Every critic thinks he's intelligent, but that's the last thing the average critic actually is. A critic becomes a critic by making other critics think he's intelligent. A leading critic is someone who has gotten promoted inside a little hothouse of standard opinions. But the critic honestly believes that he is there because he is intelligent. No, I didn't say that Saturday Night Live was aimed at intelligent people. I said it was aimed at educated people. Professors think they are intellectuals. The last thing a professor is an intellectual. But anytime you criticize professors, they're going to start calling you an anti-intellectual, because they, the people you're criticizing, are intellectuals. As I point out in my book, Why Johnny Can't Think, America's Professor Priesthood, which you can get at readbob.com. A professor is someone who got his PhD inside a hothouse environment of self-selected professors inside a set of standard opinions to which he subscribes. There's nothing intellectual about him. By the same token, there's nothing intelligent about the yuppie audience that watched, I don't know if they still do, Saturday Night Live. But they did understand, as a matter of course, some things that the general American population would consider revealing. One skit was a recruiting session where colleges were trying to find high school students to go to their colleges. In one closed session, the representative of a college said, you just pay your tuition and you can do anything you want to for 4 years. You can go to the Riviera with your parents' expense money, anything you want to, and after 4 years we'll sign you up as having a degree. Every year we'll send you a set of good grades. This made perfectly good sense to the people watching the program. They were all college graduates. Their parents were college graduates. They knew what a fraud it was. They knew very well that as long as a bunch of professors signed the right papers, it didn't matter whether you'd seen the inside of college or not. In other words, they had been through this, quote, education, unquote, and they all thought it was hilarious that someone was exposing what a fraud it was. But while they saw through that, they still had the standard liberal opinions that their parents had been taught by the professors and they had had reinforced by the professors when they went to college. They could see the fraud that college was, but they could not do more thinking and think, well, maybe what those professors taught me also had a very large smelly rat in it. No, they were educated. And that means they were indoctrinated not to think like that. The general American population probably thought that that skit was a joke, that whole thing. These college graduates knew very well that it was not a joke. That's all professors do, is sign a piece of paper. It doesn't matter whether he went to college or not. But the average American would think there's something wrong with this. There's something wrong with this whole system and with all the ideas it spreads. But that never occurs to someone who is the product of two generations of college brainwashing. It never occurred to them that there may be something wrong with the opinions that these professors had taught them. They repeated them all with perfect obedience. So, as I say, these were educated people. They are not intelligent people. I always laugh when I see somebody talk about art for art's sake. Actually, many and many a time, there has been a fake Monet or a fake Rembrandt, and every art expert has talked about how beautiful it was, how wonderful this painting was, how subtle it was, how great it was. Then, someone discovers that Monet or Rembrandt didn't actually paint the painting. It was a fake. And suddenly every art expert thought that that was a terrible thing, a terrible fraud. The price of the thing dropped 99.9 or 100%. Art for art's sake. Is it beautiful? Is it subtle? That doesn't matter. The point is, did Rembrandt do it? Did Monet do it? So much for art's sake. When I talk about this sort of thing, the average person's response is, how can experts be so stupid? Now, if you ever wonder why I don't get any points for diplomacy, you need to listen to my answer to the question, why are experts so stupid? I point out that experts are not stupid at all. You are. After all, the expert is making a wonderful living, sit around commentating on television about the middle of the road or giving his opinion on the stock market. The guy you elect to office who is saying stupid things. But he is also is enjoying being a congressman or senator or president. You elected him. So he's not being stupid at all. The person who is enjoying a good income because he's a stock market analyst or an art critic or a professor is not stupid at all. He's got just what he wants. You are the one who is sitting around in bug-eyed wonder at his brilliance in paying him money. But there are other costs besides money to your sitting around in bug-eyed wonder listening to the wise sayings of experts or electing people who tell you what you want to hear to office. The problem is that these people are also fundamentally stupid about their subjects, not about fooling you. And they're fundamentally dishonest. And you are trusting them with your money, your national policy, and your lives. People will say to me, the reason that the Conservative Party of England got destroyed after it got rid of Margaret Thatcher's extremism was not because they went to the middle of the road, but because they got caught in scandals. People will say Richard Nixon was destroyed because he got caught in scandals, got being dishonest, got caught being a crook, not because he was a middle of the roader. Let me remind you of something. Every time someone says the middle of the road is magic, they're giving a piece of advice to a political party. Now, the political base of the Democratic Party, the one that nominates candidates, is far left. The political base of the Republican Party, the one that nominates candidates, is far right. When someone says that these people who believe in a relatively extreme position should nominate someone who advocates a nice middle-of-the-road position, who's willing to compromise his principles, they're advocating dishonesty. Naturally, Richard Nixon, who was a middle-of-the-road politician, had a great tendency to be a crook. For all, his whole position was based on dishonesty, and nominating him was based on the dishonesty of the party base. If you will look back of scandals, you will find very few extreme leftists or extreme rightists who are part of it. These tend to be honest people. When you go to the middle of the road as a political strategy, you are advocating dishonesty. Oddly enough, the people you nominate have a tendency to get caught in scandals. You are the person who pays extra money so that a company can hire someone who went to college for no particular reason. It comes out of your income. They get what they want. No, you are the idiot in the crowd.
Let me take a deep breath and deal with one more truly stupid argument. I said that companies hire people because they went to college for no particular reason. There's always an answer to this. Now, you can tell when an answer is particularly stupid because the people giving it are so proud of themselves. It's like the middle of the road nonsense. You can tell somebody's about to say something repetitive and stupid because they think they thought of it and they think that they're being very wise. So, the argument is going to be, well, Bob, you yourself said that a person who graduates from college is going to come from a better family or is going to work his way through school, and therefore it is a legitimate requirement. Oh, Lord. Anyway, this, as I point out in my book, Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood, as I point out exhaustively, this argument has been used to support a professor priesthood and educational system that is destroying our country. We will have to come up with some other test. We're going to have to take down the universities and come up with some other test that is not so destructive. So the person who says, well, Bob, you yourself, and then he congratulates himself, and everybody sits there in bug-eyed wonder at his brilliance, you yourself, they will say, have said that people who graduate college have a lot more going for them than people who do not graduate from college. Yes, that's true. Yes, you've made a wonderful, wonderful point. But the fact is, if we're not going to destroy our society, we're going to have to come up with something productive for people to do besides go to the professor priesthood and be ordained college graduates. While the morons are giggling to themselves about this wonderful point they have made and they thought of, let me urge you once again to read Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood. And let me remind you once again that tens of millions of young people know that they were cheated in their college education. Tens of millions of young people are paying off back-breaking college loans. And they would like nothing better than this revolution, which would allow them to save their money after they paid off these college loans, not to pay their children's tuition. And as we know, tuition is climbing out of sight. They would like to spend their money maybe for their own retirement. I'm retired. I enjoy it, I think. Maybe they would enjoy retirement, but they don't have a movement which will overthrow the establishment to which their lives and all their money is now dedicated. We have to get rid of the professor priesthood, and we have tens of millions of young allies who would like nothing better.
The single most widely accepted assumption in our society is that, for white Gentiles, treason is loyalty. Some time ago, a black conservative wrote an article which bemoaned the fact, I couldn't say bemoaned, she was furious, that white people simply would not stand up for themselves. Now, she didn't write this article because she wanted to make white people feel good or as an act of charity. She wrote it because white willingness to suffer and give up things is an integral part of the weakness that is destroying all of Western civilization. Unlike the, quote, black leaders, unquote, she fully understands that if Western civilization goes down, it is the civilization she is part of, and she and everything she values will go down with it. So she was demanding to know why white people simply would not stand up for themselves. Now, when I write a conservative, a respectable conservative, about my concern that the white race is being genocided, if that's a verb, out of existence, that it is required for every respectable conservative to agree that the race problem will be solved when all white countries and only white countries bring in large numbers of non-whites and mix with them, these respectable conservatives invariably write me back, with the exception, of course, of Pat Buchanan, that they wonder why I am concerned about, as they say, your race. Why are you concerned about your race? Now, they're white. They refer to it as your race to make it clear that they have no such concerns at all. They have not the slightest interest in my race. Now, if I were to write them back and say, I have as much concern for your country as you do about my race. I have as much loyalty to your country as you have to my race. They would go ballistic. They would say I was being a traitor. He's a white American. I'm a white American. He demands that I be loyal to America. And at the same time, the first article of his creed is that he has no concern whatsoever about white people and their actual existence. But everybody assumes this, that you're supposed to be loyal to America, but you're supposed to have no loyalty whatsoever, in fact, quite the opposite, toward whites. They always point out that Hitler was loyal to his race, and therefore if I am loyal to my race, then I am a Hitler. Well, I hate to break it to you, but Hitler was also a German nationalist. He was very loyal to Germany. So if my concern about my race is Nazism, then conservative concern about their country is also Nazism. If the world had a policy of demanding that every black country on the planet, and only black countries, bring in huge numbers of non-blacks and mix with them, and said this would solve the, quote, race problem, unquote, it wouldn't take anybody more than 10 seconds to realize that this was a policy of genocide toward black people, toward the black race. And everybody would be appalled if there were a black man on this entire planet who didn't resent this and fight it. But if I resent this and fight it, I am a traitor to American principles, the melting pot. This is a very sick assumption, and as the black columnist pointed out, it is the kind of assumption that destroys civilizations. But every conservative, in order to be respectable, must be, quote, anti-racist, unquote, which means that he agrees with Noel Ignatieff, who says that treason to the white race is loyalty to humanity. Professor Ignatieff, who draws his income from Harvard University, also says that the abolition of the white race is such a desirable goal that many feel that no one could oppose it except committed white supremacists. And that is exactly every respectable conservative says that treason to the white race is loyalty to humanity, and that the abolition of the white race, which they call the race problem, because it doesn't exist in Africa or Asia, it only exists in white countries, that the abolition of the white race is such a desirable goal that anyone who opposes it is a committed white supremacist, or a Nazi, even. This is an assumption that our entire society today takes for granted.
Now, as I say, I don't expect most people to understand what I'm talking about here, and a certain number of people who are listening to this program get paid to do so. They are, quote, monitoring hate, unquote. They will get sent out frantic emails asking for money and saying that this guy, Whitaker, is anti-intellectual and Nazi and all of the usual things. But there are a certain number of you out there who will be a little surprised that common sense like this is not normal. Well, let me tell you, it isn't. As I said, I wrote two books that were praised by Publishers Weekly and Kirkus, recommended for purchase by the Library Journal. But this book, Why Johnny Can't Thank America's Professor Priesthood, I had to publish myself. What I say is common sense, but it is not allowed